Welcome, 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 Real Stories Podcast listeners, to the final episode of Real Stories Podcast for the year 2025.
The last one, finally.
Yes, this turned out to be the year of Cynthia File.
It did. It really did.
With Dan Reed in there as well. But a great year. I thought we had a fun year.
We did.
Doing it.
We put a lot of time into this Red Slipper Murder, Real Story of Cynthia File episodes.
Yeah.
A lot of research to do.
A lot of research and then a lot of planning and just trying to figure out how we could make that one be kind of good.
And just, you know, you and I and Jordan, and to Jordan's credit, she helped as well.
Oh, absolutely.
We did a lot of work behind the scenes, what we call at work, the back office stuff, just trying to figure out how to tell the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, I wanted to throw a shout out to the Upper Sandusky High School class of 1983, who back in the folklore class of 1983.
Was it?
Yeah, 1983, okay. that put together a book in their folklore class that was taught by Charlotte Leith,
yep.
Who I'm sure some of our listeners, probably most of them, remember Charlotte Leith.
I had Charlotte Leith.
Yeah, great educator from Upper, is still educating people.
Yeah, yep.
And they put together a great book. It's available at the Wyandotte County Museum. If anyone's ever interested in looking at it, it has tons of, they just collected newspapers and firsthand accounts from a bunch of the people that were involved in the investigation and were still alive in 1983.
But it's also available at the library, right? In the heritage room?
It is in the heritage room at the library. And so, a bunch of the newspaper articles also available there.
And if I'm not mistaken, it might be, would that be considered a historiography of the case, I guess, because it's really just a gathering of all the sources that
it is. Yeah. It's not told in any sort of narrative form. It's just page after page of different documents.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is nice. That's what I want.
Yeah,
I'd rather have that than have it already be filtered.
But much like the news, it's easier to just know the facts and then make the decisions yourself. Yeah.
And it was kind of fun as a historian, it was kind of fun to look at four newspaper articles and be like, okay, wait, this one's saying this timeline and this one's got a slightly different timeline. Yeah. And then trying to piece it all together was a fun part of that project. Definitely wanted to thank the class of 1983, and then really just everybody who we've talked to since we started doing it, the people you run into at A&A Grocery that are like, hey, by the way, I saw a book and it was about the haunted history of Delaware and it has the ghost of Cynthia File haunts that football field.
You know? Or thanks for doing this because that's really cool that I didn't know the story before that.
Like that's
what I've noticed. A lot of people really didn't fully understand the beginning to end, how it all went down. And I think now this has been enlightening for a lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of people thought that her body was on 44 at Rattlesnake Woods at the corner of 44 and 67.
Yep.
A lot of people thought her body was found at the Upper Sandusky Reservoir.
Oh.
And a bunch of different people that came out said, oh, I didn't know that was where it was. And it's like, no, it definitely, you know, that's a definite spot.
We have tried to prevent as factual as possible this story.
Yeah. So. Other than me hating Roy by the end, I got a little biased, I think, towards the end. On whether I thought Roy acted in a crime of passion or whether he planned it out, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, so we're, you know, with that being said, I thought it'd be interesting just to real quick mention, because I had this thought after we'd already recorded the third episode. I saw Back to the Future on TV. And that was November, when he went back in time, it was November 5th,
1955.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so 2 years later, but at least in a frame of reference, when I go back, I wish on episode one would be like, if you're trying to picture this, kind of picture at least, you know, not that the Back to the Future was super historically accurate, but at least, you know, the cars and the, you know, the burger shop. And
I think it's pretty close. I mean, Mr. Sandman playing on the radio, that sort of thing. I don't know that 2 years made much of a difference other than the release dates of some of those songs, but
sure. Yeah. I did, just thinking about this too, was like 1953, Dwight Eisenhower was the president.
Yeah.
It was the year that Watson and Crick discovered DNA. Queen Elizabeth II was coronated in 1953.
And she just passed away.
Yeah. Joseph Stalin died in 1953. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that's going on around that time. You know, Hillary Norgay climbed Mount Everest.
Yeah.
So anyway, just, you know, there was obviously other JFK and Jacqueline Kennedy got married that year.
Was that the year?
Yeah. So a bunch was happening in 53.
Yeah. Well, it was post-war.
Yeah.
A lot of progress at that time in the United States.
But in Wyandotte County, I'll tell you what, the thing that fall was the Red Slipper murder.
Yep.
It was sensationalized in the papers.
To be fair, the thing that fall was the fair. And then Red Slipper murder.
That's right. Yeah. It's always the fair.
It's always about the fair.
So, okay. So Brian and I have come to a decision about episode 4 that we hope you guys will agree with. And it is that, you know, we in episode 3, Cynthia was murdered. Mm-hmm. And then Roy went and did all his shenanigans. And then he was caught. And then he admitted to it. And obviously there's going to be a trial. And we've decided to just quickly tell you what happened at the trial. And we're not going to try to dig into what happened to Roy Schnigel.
Right.
Because that is not Cynthia's story.
No.
And we want to keep this as much about Cynthia as we could have done.
Yeah. The goal at the beginning, at the onset of this little project of ours, was to still honor her and honor her name.
Correct.
And I think we've done as good a job as we can with that.
Yes.
But there's no way to tarnish it by adding any information about him after this.
Yeah, like trying to track him down or whatever.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
I'm not Chris Hansen.
Yeah. All right, so I have an idea. I think we can do this. I think we can tell. Let's recap the whole story as quick as we can. Maybe 5 minutes. We'll give a 5-minute quick recap of the real story of Cynthia File.
Previously on The Real Story of Cynthia File. Cynthia was the bright, capable daughter of a hardworking family in White Plains, New York. She swam, rode horses, babysat, sewed her clothes. By 1952, she was off to college at Ohio Wesleyan in Delaware, chasing her own American dream.
That's right. And right there at the Day on the J, she met Roy Skip Schnigel Jr.
Skip.
Charming, confident, well-dressed, and maybe a little too smooth boy. Their romance was intense and heavy, and their grades slipped. By the end of their freshman year, she was done with school for good.
Summer 53 was on them. Cynthia brought Roy home. They discussed getting married, but her parents shot it down. Not impressed. His parents shot it down. They have sex. Then he heads back to Mayfield Heights to work as a jumper at the Higbee department store for the summer.
A few days later, Cynthia, with the help of her mom, writes him a breakup letter. And at the urging of Rose, she returns his frat pen. Then she sneaks a letter to him through a friend named Carolyn Scheid, telling him that she's still in love with him. They continue to write letters throughout July and August.
Yeah, but Cynthia's parents are getting her back on track. She's secured a job and needs a new outfit. So on Saturday, August 22nd, 19-year-old Cynthia went shopping with her mom, which 19-year-olds do. She finds a dress she likes and a pair of red CoverGirl slippers, size 8. The clerk throws in a tin of red wax polish.
The next night, she's in her bedroom brushing her hair. Perry Como's probably playing No Other Love floating through the air. Hurry home to me, wishing that you could be. And she's probably sitting there thinking of Roy. And I'm pretty sure, Brian, that she thinks by this point that she's pregnant.
Or at least wants to be. The next morning, her parents assume she's gone to work. By nightfall, they realize she hasn't come home. Then a postcard arrives from Manhattan.
Don't worry about me. I'm going out on my own. She was chasing after Roy under a fake name, Cindy Morehouse. She travels to Mayfield Heights for the last couple weeks of summer vacation 1953. But this was no vacation, Brian.
No. She crashes with the teach-out family, gets a job as a lingerie clerk at the Higbee department store, and finds out for certain that she is pregnant with Roy's child.
You might think she'd be excited. Well, this is part of their plan. But instead, she's scared. She secretly goes to see Reverend Brown before telling Roy. So what's Roy do? Heads back to college.
Yeah. Roy gets back to Ohio Wesley and writes her to say that he is not responsible for that baby. Age stuff, Ohio law, whatever. Then on Monday, September 14th, Cynthia gets her final letter from Roy.
Catch a bus to Delaware this Thursday. Bring everything you own. Tell no one. And bring all your money. What a jerk.
On September 16th, 1953, Cynthia boarded a bus bound for Delaware, thinking she was chasing her future.
He picks her up from the bus stop around 1:30 in the morning. They drive around and ultimately end up at a football equipment shed where he leaves her the next morning so he can rent his buddy to Columbus for a doctor's appointment. He tells her to stay in the shed.
Cynthia doesn't stay in the shed all day, and she was noticed by some guy and his kids on their way to throw some top water at the old Tangi River.
That night, he gets back around 8, and they have sex in the shed. Classy. And that's when things go bad.
That's an understatement. Things turned deadly, actually. According to Roy, he asks her if anyone saw her during the day. And when she says yes, he starts yelling at her and being crazy.
And that's when she says, "Don't be silly. You're being overbearing." And she lightly slaps him and brushes his nose.
And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Roy claims to black out. He throws her on the ground, punches her in the face multiple times, and proceeds to choke her. As her color fades from her face, he continues to tighten his grip. Within 30 seconds, she goes limp, but he keeps squeezing.
Yeah, he claims to have blacked out, and when he comes to, she's unconscious. So what does he do? Leave her lying there so he can go back to the frat house, grab a 4-foot black iron pipe, and heads back to the shed. Does he call the police and ask for help, Brian?
No, he does not.
Nope. Does he ask his buddies to come help save his girlfriend's life, Brian?
No, he doesn't do that either. He goes back to finish the job. He drags her limp body up to his 1949 Plymouth coupe, throws her in the back seat of the car, and drives north on State Route 23 toward Upper Sandusky. But somewhere between Delaware and Upper, he hears her moan from the back seat. So he pulls over and gets his iron pipe out and beats her even more to make sure that she is dead, disfiguring her so that no one will possibly recognize her.
That's right. Then he gets back into his car, drives through Upper Sandusky and past the Wyandotte County Fairgrounds, where he sees the fair going on. He proceeds about 2 miles north of Upper Sandusky to County Road 42, hangs a left, and dumps her body in Ellen Madison's woods.
And that, listeners, is the end of Cynthia Files' story.
It is. But it's not the end of our story. Roy drives back to Delaware, dumps the evidence in the Olentangy River, goes out on the town and necks with a random girl in the backseat of that very same Plymouth coupe. Then he has a date Saturday night with Aunt Bloomfield. Gross. Anyway, Brian, let's talk real quick then about the investigation here in Wyandotte County.
The next morning, county worker Carl High Pockets Gatchel is doing his rounds on County Road 42 when something catches his eye in the trees.
He thinks it's just trash at first, but then he sees the shape. It's a body.
He drives straight to the sheriff's office, pale as a ghost. Deputy Stuart Hollinshead jumps in the truck, and the two head back. What they find under that blanket in Ella Madison's woods will haunt them forever.
A young woman, beaten beyond any recognition. The coroner later counts 16 blows to the head, multiple to the stomach, and notices that she's 3 months pregnant.
The sheriff, Dean McAllister, 25 years old and Ohio's youngest, calls in everybody he can. The state crime lab, the coroner, a photographer, a local photographer, and he blocks the road. And they begin the investigation.
This looks personal. It wasn't random. This was a rage-filled murder.
They find nothing, almost nothing at the scene. A few shotgun shells, some burned fair flyers.
So, the sheriff rounds up Wyandotte County Fair carnies from the Gooding Amusement Company. Guys with nicknames like Tex and Brownie. Colorful men, fun, but they're not killers. They decide to put it out to the public.
Well, at least they weren't killers in this case.
That's true. That's true. We don't know. They decide to put out a missing girl.
Yeah.
A missing girl alert.
So then comes the break. The victim's red cover girl slippers are still on her feet. Police Chief Kirchner recalls that they might have serial numbers or run numbers on the inside of the soles. Tom Vogel of Vogel's Shoe Store tracks them to a department store in White Plains, New York.
White Plains, New York. Cynthia's hometown.
Exactly. McAllister reaches out to the authorities there looking for tips. And that's when Westchester County calls. A girl named Cynthia Files has been missing since August 24th. Same height, same scars, same red shoes.
So they get a hold of her brother, Robert. He drives up from Columbus with a friend to identify the body. X-rays confirm it. The arm fracture from when she was a kid matches perfectly. This girl is Cynthia File.
So early the next morning, police bring her ex-boyfriend, Roy.
In the back seat of the patrol car, he looks up and asks, "Is it Cynthia?"
He already knew. At the station, Roy gives a 9-page confession. He claims to have blacked out, but it was more than that. Jealousy, rage, a way out, betrayal, all of it.
Roy gives a full confession to this heinous crime. He gets local lawyer Ray Stansberry to represent him. The papers go crazy as newsmen from around the state flock to Upper Sandusky. Okay, so then, Brian, that gets us to Roy's trial.
Yeah.
Which was, well, you know...
There wasn't really a trial.
Correct. His sentencing.
His
really.
Allocution.
Yep. And, yep. His plea. Yep. Okay, here's what it is. So Roy, after Roy confesses to the murder, they call his parents. His parents come down. They, Cynthia's body will eventually be returned to White Plains, and she has her funeral. And Roy's parents come down. They stay in room 40 of the Haviland Hotel. The Haviland Hotel has been many things in Upper Sandusky. It was probably run by Joseph McCutcheon of McCutcheonville fame at first. But that was also then for a long, long, long time known as the Reber House Hotel. And we're talking about like the Amvets Park that is directly across from A&A, just north of the Corner Inn in Upper Sandusky, right on the corner of Walker Street and Sandusky Avenue. There's nothing there now. The Haviland Hotel was eventually torn down. It was also called the Warpole House at one time, Brian. So, I mean, that thing's been a lot of places. But his parents stayed there. They were interviewed by the local papers and by newsmen from around the state. And, you know, they couldn't believe this happened. He was, you know, their little boy. How could this have happened? His mom worried that maybe she had spoiled him, and I think that's probably true at some level. He just didn't quite always have to face up to the consequences of his actions until now. So he hires local attorney Raymond Stansberry, which is that law office of Stansberry, Schoenberger, Scheck is still in downtown Upper Sandusky, still serving the people. And Schoenberger, comes up with a pretty, you know, solid idea, solid plan to make sure that Roy gets the best representation he can. And in the end, that will lead to some question first on Roy's sanity. Roy is at the, you know, Wyandotte County Jail, one of the oldest jails in Ohio still. And he, you know, there's some stories that maybe some girls were trying to bring him ice cream and stuff because he was such a looker, and who knows, but I can't prove any of those stories. But we do know that they consider an insanity plea that Roy had temporarily lost his mind. He claims he has no real recollection of like the actual murder, the strangling and all that. But I think in the end, what happened was it was very difficult for them to prove where Roy had been murdered, and we'll get to that in a sec. But so they're going to end up entering a plea making a deal that he would plead guilty to second degree murder instead of first degree murder. Harold Roth is the prosecuting attorney, and they cannot prove where she actually passed away.
Yeah, which is part of the reason why they go with a plea, basically.
Yep.
or second degree.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah, there was no need. They did bring a jury in because they have to offer him a jury trial.
Yep.
And so there were jurors, but he just came in stoic. They said he didn't have he had no emotion. He came in, he pled. I should go back. Harold Roth, through lots of lawyers and lots of like the Ohio Attorney General, said, look, murder one's tough.
Yeah.
You know, the way he's explained it, it was a crime of rage. It was not premeditated. And if you're accepting his story.
Basically, what's happening is they're trying to figure out where they're going to try him, first of all. Because if they try him in Wyandotte County, they have to prove that she died in Wyandotte County. But if they try him in Delaware, they have to prove she died in Delaware. But he said in his confession or whatever, that halfway here, he beat her again in the back of the car. Yep. So that was somewhere in Marion County.
And Marion County flat out said,
we don't want it.
I don't want this.
Yeah. So basically, they were trying to figure out what's the best approach to putting this guy behind bars. Like, correct. That's all they were really concerned
about. Yeah. Don't let him get out.
Don't let him get away. Right.
And so they do. They looked into an insanity plea too.
Yep.
Roy's lawyers, Stansberry decided that's not pot. He wasn't insane. And so in the end, on October 24th, he pled guilty to second degree murder, which carried with it life in prison.
Yep.
With possible parole after 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's probably something that our listeners might not know, that on December 2nd of 1963, 10 years later, he was released from prison and at age 29.
And went on to live a life.
Somewhere, you know, I mean, he evidently worked for a newspaper under an anonymous name, blah, 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 whatever happened to him. So be it.
Yep.
And we'll leave it there. And, you know, unfortunately, Cynthia has very little legacy. She doesn't, you know, she's never had any children and, you know, there's not much.
Never birthed any children.
Right. Yeah. So, but we do hope that we honored her legacy throughout this podcast and hope that you guys enjoyed listening to this podcast because we had a fun time doing it.
We did. Yeah. We've got some other stories coming up and, I think most of our listeners probably are aware that we're working on something behind the scenes about the blizzard. So that's going to be fun.
If you hear this and you know somebody that has a great blizzard story and wants to tell us, you know, send us an email or something. We'd love to hear it. But we've already done quite a few recordings of some stories. We had some had a great time.
We did
recording a bunch of blizzard stories. And so we're going to,
during the Home for the Holidays event.
Yeah. So we're going to piece those together for you guys and hopefully have those out. And then we've got some more interviews coming and going to be a fun 2026 250. We're actually, I think we can announce this. We're interviewing Billy Friend.
Oh yeah.
Chief Billy Friend of the Wyandotte Nation, is going to come on the podcast sometime in the spring. We'll probably release that right around June or July this year. So that one's exciting for us. And then we've got a bunch more coming down too. So it should be fun.
Yeah.
With that being said, I mean, I think we're pretty much done here for the year, Brian.
I think it's a wrap on a really successful series of podcasts with the Red Slipper and Cynthia File, and also just a wrap on 2025 in general.
Absolutely. I would like to take a quick minute just to say thanks to all of you out there for listening. We really appreciate it and love the feedback. Keep it coming. We would do this even if you didn't listen, but the fact that some people do tune in and listen makes it certainly a more rewarding endeavor for us. I wanted to thank my wife and kids, and I know Brian wants to thank his wife and kids, you know, for giving us the time to do this. I mean, they're just super supportive of everything that we do. And yeah, you know, we're really blessed. Super duper blessed. Okay. Well, hey, this is Graham
and Brian,
and this has been another episode of the Real Stories Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed, and we will all see you soon. It has been real.